Hey everyone, before we start this episode of the Power Records podcast, I just want to say that it is sponsored by InStock Trades. InStock Trades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 45% off with free shipping for orders of $50 or more. Two of the deals that I wanted to highlight and related to this episode are Hulk-centric books, because we're going to cover a Hulk Power Record in this episode. One is Essential Rampaging Hulk, Volume 1. Which reprints the Black and White Hulk magazine, Rampaging Hulk numbers 1 to 9, Hulks 10 through 15, and Incredible Hulk number 269, featuring stories by Doug Manich, Jim Starlin, John Warner, Bill Mantlow, and art by Walt Simonson, Jim Starlin, Keith Pollard, Herb Trimpe, Sabu Samba, and Ron Wilson, cover artist Ken Barr. Normal price, the page count is 576 pages, normal price $16.99, InStock Trades has it for $9.85. That is probably the single best deal on the entire website. 600 pages for less than $10. And this stuff is beautiful. I loved the Hulk magazine growing up. It was one of my favorites. And to see it all collected, I'm going to pick up this one because this is a total blast. And another one I wanted to mention is Essential Hulk Volume 5, which reprints Incredible Hulk issues 171 through 200. And 171 is the issue that Power Records adapted into the audio adventures, which we'll get to shortly. It also reprints Incredible Hulk Annual number 5. Stories by Steve Englehart, Jerry Conway, Roy Thomas, Tony Isabella, Len Wein, Chris Claremont. That's an all-star cast right there. With artists Herb Trimpe, Marie Severin, Sabu Sema, and Joe Staton. Cover artists Rich Buckler and John Romita. Page count, 616 pages. Normal price, $16.99. InStock Trades has it for $9.85. That's even a slightly better deal than the Rampaging Hulk. You get a couple more pages for the same price. You can't beat it. Tons of fun. Go out and support InStock Trades. Support the show by shopping at InStock Trades. For all these and other trade paperback needs, visit InStockTrades.com. And now, on with the show.
Power Records presents...
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Power Records Podcast, the podcast where the action comes alive. I am one of your co-hosts, Rob Kelly, creator of the Aquaman Shrine and regular co-host of the Fire and Water Podcast, among other podcasting efforts. And with me, as always, is my co-host, Earth 2 Chris, a.k.a. Chris Franklin. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm good, Rob. How are you?
I'm doing well. Are you excited? Are you ready for these particular audio adventures?
I am pumped up.
Okay, all right. So starting right off is The Amazing Spider-Man. This episode is going to have a Marvel theme. We always try and keep a theme. The first episode was monsters, and the second one was Christmas. So now we're going to visit the House of Ideas here. So we're going to start off with The Amazing Spider-Man in The Invasion of the Dragon Men. So sit back and enjoy.
It is a warm summer night on a hilltop, far from the bright lights of the city. A group of beginner students in astronomy gazes up at the northern stars. Their instructor is speaking.
The easiest way to identify the constellations is to start with Ursa Major, the Big Dipper.
There it is. It's beautiful.
Boy, am I thirsty. Could you pour me a Coke out of that dipper?
Very funny, Jimmy.
And over there, opposite the Big Dipper, lies Cassiopeia, queen of the heavens.
Looks like the letter W.
Right. Now look carefully. Halfway between the Big Dipper and Cassiopeia lies Polaris, guiding star of our planet Earth.
Hey, this is a drag. Come on, Sue. Let's split and go over there by ourselves.
Gee, I don't know.
Nobody will even notice we're gone.
Well, okay, but just for a little while.
And there, winding a huge coil around Polaris like a serpent getting ready to strike, lies Draco the dragon.
Wow! Really looks like a dragon. And hey, look at all those shooting stars. Almost like the dragon is breathing fire right down at us.
That's just a meteor shower. But it is unusually bright.
I'd swear they landed right there on the other side of the hill.
What an imagination she's got. Hey, isn't this better than being with them?
Well, Jimmy, look.
Huh? Good Lord, get down, Sue. Don't move.
Those creatures!
They got almost human bodies!
And dragon heads!
They're heading right toward the others!
Look at that one! Bigger than the rest! He looks like... He is a dragon! dragon, breathing smoke and fire.
And he walks like a man.
I think he sees us.
Earth people, hear me and hear me well. I, Draco, king of the dragonmen, master of the heavens, from this moment on, shall rule over planet Earth. Your fate is sealed.
The next morning, down at the Daily Bugle, publisher J. Jonah Jameson is furious.
Listen to this. Mysterious disappearance of young group of students terrifies country, baffles police. That's from the Clarion. And this, reports of strange lights, UFOs, and weird creatures from space have aroused fear and panic in the countryside. That's from the Ledger. And what have we got? Not a word. Not a picture.
Mr. Jameson, these reports just came in. You better look at them.
Invasion by creatures from space confirmed. New York City may be their next objective. Eyewitnesses describe space creatures as dragon men. Parker!
Yes, sir?
Parker, this is the biggest thing of the century. You get out there and get me some pictures fast, or you're through. You got that?
Yes, sir. Whew, is he mad?
And as for the rest of you so-called reporters...
Dragon men. Oh, boy, I never did go for all that space creature jiving. Uh-oh, my spider sense is tingling.
Hi, Peter. Where are you going in such a hurry?
Hi, Mary Jane. Old Jameson sent me on a wild goose chase. He's really freaking out.
Mind if I join you?
Oh, come on. Only, you're gonna have to move fast. Something strange going down. Everywhere I walk, it's like danger walking along with me. Especially when I pass a manhole or a sewer.
Peter Parker, are you talking to yourself again?
Huh? Sorry, MJ. Look, this thing's bugging me. I'll call you soon, okay?
Well, if that's the way you feel.
Hated to do that, but I gotta get back to my pad, switch into my Spider-Man outfit. Old Webhead, gotta take a closer look at the sidewalks of New York. And I don't mean the song of the same title.
Late that afternoon, in one of the myriad of subterranean passages beneath the streets of the city...
Yuck! Boy, I can think of 100 places I'd rather be than down here in the sewer system of New York. But from the minute I got here, my spider sense has been jumping like a yo-yo. Every passage I've been in has been sending out danger signals. And yet I haven't seen... Hey, wait a minute. Light up ahead. Gotta move in closer. Look at that! A huge control room of some kind. I wasn't here before. And who or what is running those machines? Jump in, Jupiter. It's the Dragon Men. And up on that platform, that's got to be the leader. He's a dragon. An honest-to-goodness, fire-eating, smoke-breathing dragon. Standing up like a 10-foot man and...
Welcome, Spider-Man. Come in.
Holy cow. He even talks like a man. And how does he know me? I got to play this cool. At your service, Mr.
We can dispense with pretense, Spider-Man.
Not a bad rhyme for a dragon.
Draco, king of the dragon men, has not descended from the heavens to bandy words with mere earthlings.
Then why has Draco come?
Since you are about to die, I'll tell you why. By midnight tonight, your time, the mighty Draco will be master of planet Earth.
From what I see right here, it looks like he could do it, too. Gotta stall for time. Learn his plan. Sounds like a tall order, even for a bragging dragon.
Your insolence is beneath my notice, Spider-Man. But the minute I activate this miniature model of my hydromagnetic energy deactivator...
A miniature? It must be 20 feet long by 10 feet high.
Precisely. This miniature HMD will instantaneously paralyze every energy source in this city.
Every energy source? You mean... People, too?
Obviously. Every living thing in its minuscule way is an energy source and will be deactivated, paralyzed, as you might say.
Then what? New York is only one small part of the world.
When word of this event is heard all around your so-called world, I shall issue an ultimatum which will bring it to its knees, subject to the rule of Draco.
Gotta stop him and his machine somehow.
But first I shall dispose of the one earthling who might get in my way. You, Spider-Man. When Draco next speaks, you shall die.
Wow, that was close. He's a walking flamethrower. Shot that flame out of his mouth 30 feet away. You missed, old buddy. You want to try again? Gotta lure him away from that machine long enough to get a shot at it. Come on, I'm
waiting for you. Or is the mighty Draco afraid to get off his pedestal?
Draco fears nothing or no one. Least of all, you, Spider-Man.
Ah, he's off the platform, coming toward me. Just a little more, baby. That's it.
Die, Spider-Man!
Missed again, chum. Now's my chance to get some of Spidey's patented heavy-duty, icky, sticky web fluid all over the controls of that machine, like this. Got it!
I've deactivated the deactivator. What does that do to your flaky plan, Drakey baby?
Dragonman! Seize him! Destroy him!
Uh-oh. I wondered how long before they got into the act. There's too many of them. Gotta get out of here fast.
Don't let him get away. Take him. Stop him.
I'm positive one of these tunnels leads to the control room of the city's water supply.
Wow, there it is.
Man, those old spider instincts really come in handy down here.
Now, to divert the water flow just long enough to flood the underground passages. Uh-oh. Here come a few of Draco's pretty boys.
A couple of well-aimed shots by the web-slinger. And they're out of action. Now to turn on the flood. And get out of here!
It is now 10 o'clock that night.
Whew. Nice to be on the streets of New York instead of under them.
At the latest here, special night edition, Dragon Men destroyed an underground flood. Now revealed to have been robots, not humanoids. Dragon Men destroyed. Get the latest here.
Robots? From outer space? Gotta get me up high where the air is fresh and I can clear my head and do some thinking. A little web slinging and up, up and away I go! Hey, you know, this old Empire State Building is still pretty high. And how clear the stars look from up here. There's the Big Dipper and Cassiopeia and Polaris. And, well, what do you know? Draco the Dragon, still up there. Then the leader of the Dragon Men wasn't an invader from space.
Correction, Spider-Man. Isn't an invader from space.
You, Draco, or whatever your name is, so you managed to escape.
Though you destroyed my army, you can never destroy Draco.
Come off it, Drakey, old chum. Tell me, who are you really, and why the masquerade?
This is no masquerade, I assure you. I am Demosthenes Q. Drake.
Demosthenes Drake? Winner of the Nobel Prize in biology?
At your service.
But he was reported lost during an expedition down the Amazon years ago.
Simply a cover story for my greatest experiment.
Don't tell me you allowed yourself to be bitten by a radioactive dragon like I was bitten by a spider.
You, my friend, are nothing but a freak. A mutation by accident. Draco is the triumphant result of the deliberate introduction of the genes of a giant species of iguana into the bloodstream of a human.
Transforming gentle little Demosthenes Drake into a huge fire-eating dragon that walks like a man?
And now, once and for all, we shall test Darwin's law of the survival of the fittest.
Pretty sneaky, Draco. But you missed again. Your aim hasn't improved, and neither is your breath. You ought to try fresh. The mouthwash for droopy dragons.
Your infantile wit will not save you, Spider-Man. Now, for the first time, you will feel the full power of the King of Dragons.
Wow! He shot flames from both hands and his mouth. Didn't expect that. Uh-oh. Poisonous fumes got me. Nearly paralyzed. I can hardly move.
I've got you. And now I'm going to enjoy tearing you limb from limb.
He's coming at me full speed. If he hits me, I'm a goner.
Now, die, Spider-Man.
Gotta move. Now. He went over the edge. Hit that roof 20 floors below. Gotta get down and look at him close up. My head's clearing now. Fumes wearing off. Well, I'll be. There's nothing left, not a thing. Wait a minute, what's that? I don't believe it. An iguana. A tiny iguana crawling away. Just disappeared down that hole in the wall. What an inglorious end to the career of the great Demosthenes Drake. But what a great day for the world.
And that was Invasion of the Dragon Men. I don't know about you, Chris, but in this particular story, I was kind of on Draco's side because Spider-Man's jokes are horrendous. I mean, yeah. Spider-Man jokes are always supposed to be corny, but these are just like a Catskills comedian. And every time Draco was like, enough of your prattling wall crawler, I was like, yeah, I'm kind of with Draco on this one. So what do you think of Invasion of the Dragon Men?
I agree. You know, listening to this again as an adult, and I've listened to it a few times over the years, but, you know, I wore this 45 out as a kid. And like I said, I think in a previous episode, I actually at some point ended up with a cassette tape of this.
Yeah, you told me about that. I never knew they put them on cassette. That was fascinating to me.
So there's a cassette tape of Invasion of the Dragon Man wandering around either my house or my dad's house somewhere. I have no idea. But I noticed Spider-Man's, even when he's like thinking to himself as Spider-Man, he's like extra put on.
Yeah.
More than, you know, the Spider-Man, he doesn't sound bad, but he's just like, you know, when he's running through the sewer thinking to himself, he's like, well, I think blah, blah. You know, I mean, it's just like really, you know, fake Spider-Man voice. It's like, okay, I don't know if the guy quite got that this was a thought balloon, you know, in the comic or something. There was just some strange thing. But yeah, I like Draco's voice. He was very, you know, very commanding, and I kind of liked his, you know, rhyming pattern and things like that. But
the sound effect when the dragon men are walking and it's like dun dun, and they're like muttering to themselves. Like, I thought that was actually like really kind of creepy. It's like they're like these sort of brainless automatons kind of guys.
Yeah, I thought they were like the Winky guard from The Wizard of Oz.
Exactly. A wee, you know,
offshoot chapter of the Winky guard. You know, the thing I noticed is kind of weird is you know, most of the Marvel, especially the ones they made a comic record set of, seem to be adaptations like the Hulk we're going to do. But that, as far as I know, the Invasion of the Dragon Men, was that an original Power Records?
This was an original piece. It was commissioned by Power Records. And the art in the book, I should mention that this was, as Chris is talking about, this was a book and record set. It was put out in other formats because Power Records put everything else out in other formats as a record only, but it was, in fact, issued first as a book and record set. And the art is by a combination of Larry Hama, Terry Austin, and Dick Giordano, oddly enough. I don't know why Dick Giordano did not do a lot of Marvel work, but for some reason, I think this had to have been one of those continuity associates jobs.
Yeah.
Because all three of those guys worked at Continuity. So it was probably not so much a Marvel thing as it was a Continuity thing, which is why you ended up having Giordano involved in it. But, I mean, it's a beautiful-looking book. You know, I mean, the artwork is great.
Yeah, it's kind of it's kind of weird because you can pick up some Ditko swipes and some Spider-Man poses. And then there are a few panels that look, I mean, like they're completely lifted from Amazing Spider-Man number 122, which was the Goblin's Last Stand, the second part of the Gwen Stacy death.
Oh, wow. I don't think I've ever noticed that.
The only reason I noticed it is because Andrew Leyland of Hey Kids Comics podcast pointed out in an episode, I think he was talking about the Power Records podcast, and he was talking about Power Records in general, and he mentioned that in this about the Dragon Men comic. So I'm like, really? So I got my comic out. I got my Death of the Stacy's trade paperback out. And I'm like, holy cow. there they are. So it's a really nice, it's like looking at a DC Spider-Man comic in a way.
I had never thought of it that way, but you're right. Yeah. It's like if DC had Spider-Man, what would it have looked like?
One thing that's kind of weird too, is it doesn't really feel like a Spider-Man story to me. Yeah. Because, you know, it starts out with some characters that are not related to Spider-Man at all. The annoying teenager that's macking on the girl.
Oh, I hate that kid. Oh, he reminded me of every kid that was not funny, but all the girls laughed at him. And I'm like, what? Come on. You know, like, I always thought I was so much funnier.
his voice was creepy, too. Isn't it better than being with them? You know?
Yeah. I mean, it really does sound like they're doing more than just necking out in the bushes, you know? I mean, it's like, it gets a little intense.
She's a little too into it or something, man. but you know, usually a Spider-Man story, if anything happens to normal people, it's somebody in his cast, like, you know, that would have been Peter, if Peter and Mary Jane were, you know, at a university outing, you know, looking at the stars or something, it would have felt more like a Spider-Man story than two random people or something. It didn't seem quite as Marvel-like in that regard. You know, usually it's happening to, you know, Robbie Robertson or Aunt May or somebody in Spider-Man's cast rather than two people we're never going to see again.
That's funny. I never thought about that, but you're right. You're right. I mean, that's how Peter, you know, Spider-Man would get involved. But yeah, this is totally, these are all strangers here.
Yeah. I think this was the first time I ever encountered Mary Jane. Because in the comics, like in the early 80s, she wasn't around. You know, she had left the series and then she came back in the mid 80s. And that's when they kind of started the leading up to them getting married. But I don't think I'd ever encountered her because on the cartoon, which was my main exposure to Spider-Man early on, it was Betty Brant. And you know, she wasn't on the live action TV series either. So this was, you know, the first time I've even heard of Mary Jane. So
I like how fast he ditches her. Like she's, yeah. You know, she's like, hey, Peter. And then he's like, oh, hey, Mary Jane, I got to get going. Like, what's the matter with you?
Yes,
you have that many hot redheads that want your time, Peter? I mean, come on, man. Like, what are you talking about? So
it's like, why is she even in this story? She's in it for like three panels and he ditches her.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. And it's got a bit, and it has that, you know, not a twist ending, but it's funny how the way, because it ends what seems like it's ending in midpoint. You know, like you feel like, yep. Oh, Draco's been defeated, and then he comes back again. So it is an oddly paced story, and that's a really interesting observation. That yeah, this might be kind of like a DC version of a Spider-Man story because it is not told like a typical Spider-Man story.
No, it's not as. And in fact, the narrator sounds like he's asleep later when it, you know, right before Spider-Man gets on the Empire State Building. It's 10 o'clock at night. You know, it's like all this narration in any Power Records, usually they're so, you know, full of drama and energy. It's like the dude was yawning when he said it or something. I don't know. What's with Draco turning into a tiny iguana? How's that work? I mean, he falls and he's an iguana.
I know. I didn't understand. You're not supposed to think about that. You're just supposed to accept it. Yeah. This was like you. This was one that I had as a child, and I listened to it over and over and over again. I love the comic and everything about it. So yeah, it was you know, one of the more beloved ones from my childhood. So,
oh yeah, I still love it. It's got some wacky stuff, but it's still great fun. So
yeah, it is. So yeah, so that's Spider-Man Invasion of the Dragonmen. So next up, and our second one is another Marvel, as Chris mentioned, it's going to be the Hulk, which is the name of the Power Record is The Incredible Hulk at Bay. Now, this is an adaptation of a previous Marvel comic, but we'll get into that on the other side of it. So sit back and enjoy this Hulk adventure where he takes on not only the Abomination, not only the Rhino, but, of course, General Thunderbolt Ross, who is, as usual, a giant pain in the ass. So enjoy this one, The Incredible Hulk at Bay.
Power Records presents The Incredible Hulk at Bay. As our story opens, the huge green mutant known as the Hulk has just rescued his friend, Betty Talbot, from the fury of an erupting volcano. Even Hulk knows that their chances of being found on this island are slim. But, miracle.
Betty, there is plane. Go to them. They will take you home. Go. Hulk will be all right.
Steve, look. A woman. Good Lord, it's General Ross's daughter. Let's get her out of here fast, before this whole island explodes.
The men pour out of the helicopter. They thought Betty Talbot dead. But sometimes the gods are kind.
Good to see you, Mrs. Talbot. Anyone else around? My co-pilot thought he saw someone.
No, Captain. I'm alone.
Okay, then. Let's get out of here.
As we said, the gods can be kind. But will they be kind to our stowaway? Hulk, who just saved Betty's life, is flying right back into the arms of General Ross, a man whose sworn aim in life is to catch and destroy the Hulk. This same General Ross, the builder of the notorious Hulkbuster base, will be waiting to welcome back his missing daughter. Maybe Hulk should have stayed with the erupting volcano.
So how does it feel getting away from that island? Bet you can't wait to see General Ross again. Your father's quite a guy.
Yes, I suppose he is.
Betty's voice. Now Hulk remembers. He got in box to be near Betty. Betty is Hulk's friend.
Mrs. Talbot, this isn't any of my business, but how did you survive on the island without help?
You're right, Lieutenant. It isn't any of your business.
Betty sounds angry. Should Hulk come out and help her? Hard for Hulk to think. Why is everything always so hard for Hulk?
Now is neither the time nor place to answer that question. This moment must be dedicated to other matters. Among them, a reunion. You'll excuse me, won't you, Armbruster? I want to be alone when I meet my daughter.
I read you, Ross.
The reunion of father and daughter is just as it should be. The pressure in both of them disappears. Tears of happiness well up. Unfortunately, moments like this can't last.
Colonel Armbruster, the base is empty, sir. Completely deserted.
If that means what I think it means, we're in trouble. Big trouble.
Meanwhile, aboard the shuttle jet which acted as a ferry for Betty Talbot.
It's happened again. The Hulk must have relaxed for a moment. Perhaps fallen asleep.
Whatever the reason, I've changed. I'm Bruce Banner again. The question now is, where am I? It looks like a military jet. I'd better find myself some camouflage.
A few moments later, a very confused Robert Bruce Banner leaves the cargo hold of the giant jet, bearing little resemblance to the world-famous physicist who designed the deadly gamma bomb, or to the green creature who is Hyde, Banner's general. Rather, he seems to be simply a wandering enlisted man.
If I remember the layout of the Hulkbuster base accurately, this air vent leads to the main underground concourse, and the concourse leads to the kitchens. One thing I learned a long time ago, never make plans on an empty stomach.
The silent base seems strangely dead, except for the new arrivals.
Still no sign of the men who are supposed to be manning this base?
Colonel Armbruster.
What is it, Rogers?
I just returned from the radio bunker. All of the equipment has been sabotaged. Circuits smashed. Of course, we still have the radios and our jets, but...
Then what's the problem, soldier? Seems to me we've got the situation well in hand. We'll check out this desertion thing, but for the moment, it seems things are more or less under control.
And carefully, fool. We won't have time for a second shot.
Don't worry, partner. Once I fired this baby, those army boys will be about as much trouble as a class of first graders.
1 second. Two. And before the startled eyes of 35 professional warriors, an army jet buckles and explodes. Smoke clears.
I want 6 volunteers to hit that hangar. Rogers, Clemens, Grady, Jones, Watson.
A moment's pause, and amid the rubble...
Colonel, there's something moving in Hangar 2.
Well, don't just stand there, soldier. We'll attack.
Maybe you'd better take a look-see, sir.
Eh? What in Sam Hill?
Nightmare. All his life, the man named Armbruster has been a soldier, and possibly a... But today, he finds himself confronted with a sight from his most tortured dreams. Not one uncrushable foe, but 2.
You hold them back, Abomination. Show them we mean business, and then nobody can stop us.
Nobody in the whole wide world will ever stop us again.
You're the same kind of creature as the Hulk, a gamma ray mutant.
Wrong, fool. I'm far more powerful than that green lump. I'm the Abomination, the strongest mutant of all.
Not bad, friend. In the meantime, look at what I caught.
What is this? What do you want?
Lady. We want the Hulk's blasted green hide. We kind of thought we'd team up to blast that flat-headed creep into tomorrow. As soon as the Hulk shows up here, and we figure to get him here with all this Hulkbuster equipment, all of you and him are gonna be dead.
12 hours, and night falls. A car with 2 young passengers moves ever closer to the sprawling Arizona complex known as Hulkbuster Base Number 1.
Jim Wilson. We've come almost 2,000 miles from New York, so you can say hi to some friends.
Tell you, honey, old General Ross and me go back more years than I... Looks like a roadblock.
12 hours, and the Hulkbuster base has been completely and effectively surrounded. Let's see your ID.
Well, what's going on? Some sort of raid?
That's our business, mister. Your business is to get out of here before we begin to get a little suspicious.
Okay, friend. I get the general idea.
2 more hours pass.
My head. I must have been more tired than I thought. It just goes to show you a man can't lead a double life without getting pretty exhausted. Now that's odd. No one here.
Not even a guard posted. Something's wrong. I can feel it. Dear Lord in heaven, no! Betty, General Ross, even Colonel Armbruster, sealed into one of the Hulk-retaining cells? What in the name of sanity is going on?
Dazed, the renowned scientist can only stare. He does not hear the approach of the massive figure known as the Abomination. He doesn't hear until it's much too late.
Another one! We thought we captured all the humans on this base.
A fist, like a slab of iron, clamps over Banner's mouth and nose, and the abruptness of this attack causes Banner to become excited. His heart begins to pound, and in the darkness of the dimly lit corridor, Robert Bruce Banner begins to change. Then, where once stood a quiet physicist, now stands the Incredible Hulk.
Step aside, Abomination. He's the Rhino's baby now.
Hulk doesn't understand. Hulk wakes up, and everyone attacks him. Wait! Hulk knows you. Hulk hit you before. Hulk will do it again.
Keep back, Rhino. We can capture him with one of the Hulkbuster base's specially designed weapons.
Guns? Hulk thought only soldiers use guns. Hulk doesn't like guns. Hulk will go away.
Stop him, Abomination. Stop him.
No, he won't go far. He'll be back, and we'll be ready for him.
1 hour. Time enough for Jim Wilson and his girl Talia to drive around the Hulkbuster base to find another unguarded entrance and to use it.
Not a soul in sight. And all that wreckage on the airfield.
Let's get out of here, Jim. This place gives me the...
Hulk! Big friend, am I glad to see you, especially at a time like this. Listen, do you know what's happening around here?
Jim is Hulk's friend. Maybe Jim can explain... Why ugly people attack Hulk.
Haltingly, the Hulk tells Jim and Talia as much as he can remember about the events of the past hour.
Well, the way it reads to me, these two goons are out to get you, Hulk. And from what you've said, they're willing to kill everyone on this base to do it. Looks like we don't have much choice. We'll have to use Talia as a decoy.
A decoy? Are you out of your mind, Jim Wilson? You want to play hero? Go ahead. But count me out.
Honey, I'm not going to argue with you. But I'll tell you this. If you don't help, there isn't one of us who'll get off this base alive.
A short while later in the Central Control Complex.
These gadgets read positive. The Hulk's still in the vicinity. Pretty soon he'll be ours. Then once we've... someone outside... We can't let her get away. She's heading toward the surface. Do you think she heard about the bomb?
Grab her and find out.
But when the two lumbering allies reach topside...
She's gone!
You let her escape.
She can't do us any harm. The bomb's set. Not even the Hulk can...
Sounds like things are getting pretty hot and heavy upstairs. The longer the Hulk can keep those jokers busy, the better my chances of reaching General Ross.
Soon, outside the Hulk retaining cell containing the captured Hulkbusters...
General Ross, can you read me? This is Jim Wilson, General.
Is there anything I can do to get you dudes out of there?
Jim, thank heaven someone's found us. Don't worry about us now, Jim. There's something far more important you have to take care of. The Gamma Bomb.
Gamma Bomb? You mean like the thing which turned Doc Banner into the Hulk?
Precisely. The Abomination has set it to go off in less than 3 minutes.
But why would he do a dumb thing like that?
Because he knew the Hulk was still on the base, and he expects to escape before the bomb can explode.
Wee-o! Tell me what to do, General. Fast!
5 seconds later, after Jim has listened to Ross's hurried instructions and has set the cell intercom on maximum volume...
You take the main corridor to side passage 6G. There's a ladder there, Jim. Go down 2 levels. You'll find a pressure chamber. You've got 2 minutes, Jim. Follow this passage to the end. Make a left, go 2 doors, turn right. Hurry, lad, hurry. 90 seconds. Do you see the control panel? It should be to your left.
Got it.
It's a letter combination. The letters are C-H-A-O-S. 68 seconds, Jim.
Cut it out, man. I've got the top open.
We're not out of the woods yet, son. You still have to reverse the detonation fuse.
Great. How am I supposed to do that?
I wish I could tell you, son, but I don't know how the Abomination said it. It's up to you, Jim. 47 seconds.
I said cut that out.
Phew.
There's a small pin. Touch it lightly. See which way it gives.
I'm trying it, General Ross. It's moving a bit. Now what?
Pick a direction, son, and pull. A pause. 3 seconds.
Bingo! The pin's out, General. The bomb's off. Fire out. I did it.
Meanwhile,
Hulk is tired of you hitting him. So Hulk will stop you. Like this.
I'll handle this now. You better get ready to ram him. Then we better get out of here. That cheap bomb must be ready to blast.
Hulk is sick of fighting. Hulk wants to finish it.
Don't worry, Hulk. We'll finish it for you. As only the Rhino and the Abomination can.
This is stupid. Hulk doesn't like it. Hulk can beat either of you. But Jim said to wait. Hulk has waited long enough. So now, Hulk will leave.
No. No! There's an old saying about an immovable object meeting an irresistible force. Witness such a meeting and its result.
Big boys hurt Hulk is. Why won't the world ever leave Hulk alone?
And so much for the Rhino and the Abomination. Meanwhile, the troops surrounding Hulkbuster Base Number 1 receive the long-awaited signal.
Lieutenant, look! They're telling us the danger's ended. Hulkbuster Base is back in control!
Thus, 1/2 hour later, we find ourselves attending a most unusual press conference in which the star figure is...
The Hulk! Can you tell our audience exactly how you defeated both the Abomination and the Rhino?
Take Stick out of Hulk's face, or Hulk will break it.
Hulk, can I thank you?
You're the one who hates Hulk, who wants to destroy him.
I'm also the one who owes his life to you, as we all do. Maybe there's something I should learn from that. Maybe I've been...
Holy cow! Behind you, Hulk! Look out! Look!
Bumbrister, what the devil is the meaning of this? Don't you realize what you've done?
My duty, Ross. My patriotic duty. I've captured the Hulk.
A hero 1 minute, a captive the next. So it goes in the life of our huge friend. But the Hulk will find some way out. He always does.
And that was the Incredible Hulk at bay, which, as I mentioned at the beginning, is an adaptation of a Marvel comic. The story originally appeared in The Incredible Hulk number 171, which is by Steve Englehart, Jerry Conway, Herb Trimpe, and Jack Abel. And this was part of 4 Marvel record sets. This one, Fantastic Four, Spider-Man Mark of the Man-Wolf, and Captain America. Those are the 4 that I had. Those are the ones I think of the most when I had the Power Records. I think because DC's tended to be more of the LPs, and the Marvels are more of the 45 book and record sets. And these 4, I just love to death. I mean, I always loved the Hulk. I did since I was a kid. So this one, I always loved the Abomination. So like, it had everything I liked in it. So did you have this one as a kid, Chris?
Yes, I did, and I always really enjoyed it too. I was a little honked off about the ending.
I know, it's a cliffhanger ending.
It's a cliffhanger. They drop you in the middle of a story and then leave you in the middle of a story.
Our records people, they're just like, whatever, it doesn't matter.
It's got the Hulk in it, he fights people, we're good, you know. But yeah, I really love this one. And in fact, this was kind of my introduction to the comic book world of the Hulk because, you know, why are they calling him Bruce Banner? It's David Banner.
Right.
So, that was, probably the first time I met Betty and General Ross and all those, the Hulk Buster concept and all that stuff. I mean, it was probably my introduction to all that stuff, before I got any actual Hulk comics other than, a random Marvel team up or something. So
the Hulk does actually very little in this story. When you think about it, I mean, he really doesn't do all that much. They really get involved with the comings and goings of Betty and Thunderbolt Ross and Jim Wilson and the Rhino. Like, there really is not a lot of Hulk smashing stuff. And I think my favorite part is at the very end where the news interviewer tries to interview the Hulk.
Yeah.
Is that a good idea? Really? Hulk will smash stupid Stick if you're not getting it. Like, Yeah. Here's a guy that could crush your head like a grape, and you're like, oh, Mr. Hulk, a comment? Like, what is that about? Like,
yeah, you know, and the Hulk is so, he's kind of more laid back in this story.
It was the 70s, Chris.
You know, it's like, hey, stupid, this is stupid. You know, it's like wandering off, they're wanting to fight, and he's kind of, he just ain't having none of it. He just wants to go off somewhere, and I don't know why he's not changing back to Banner if he's so mellow, but it's like, okay. The Hulk, is it just me or does the Hulk sound like Apache Chief?
He does. He does very much sound, yeah, he does have that similar sound to him. I wouldn't be surprised if it was the same guy or something. And they use all the same
He's got that very bad, stereotypical, slow, you know, Native American, you know, voice that they would use. I mean, I hate to say it, but as much as I love the Lone Ranger, he's got that, you know, Jay Silver heels almost, you know, effect going on there. And some of it is just, you know, he talks a little more, a little slower and a little less angry than I would expect out of the Hulk. But you know, I still like it. It still works. But he just doesn't seem like he's just kind of tired. He just wants to be left alone.
Did you ever see that? Did you ever see that sketch they used to do on Saturday Night Live where it was Tonto, Frankenstein, and Tarzan?
Yeah.
And it was the whole joke was that the three of them talk exactly the same. Well, the Hulk would fit in there perfectly, you know. Right. Fire, bad! You know, it was that same kind of thing. Yeah, this one, I love this one. I mean, I love Herb Trimpe. Like, Herb Trimpe is, you know, like, to me, like, the Hulk artist. That's the guy I grew up on, was his version of the Hulk. So, yeah, it's a perfect story. It's a perfect era to pull Hulk from. Now, of course, that was in the early 70s, and that's when they were going to pull from. But, it is kind of a strange story to pick, that it's the middle of a ongoing arc opposed to a one-off story. But still, it's a lot of fun. I mean, I have a feeling they probably picked it because it had the Abomination and Rhino in it.
Right.
You know, you got that couple different villains, and the cover is great because it's Hulk in the middle of the Abomination and Rhino about to attack him. So it's a very captivating set of images.
You know, it was funny, the most recent issue of back issue number 70 was all about the Hulk, and it's got some article in it by some guy named Chris Franklin. I don't know, but plug. There's an article. There's several articles on, of course, Hulk comics in the Bronze Age, and they show an earlier issue of the Hulk. I think it was like number 159. He's fighting the Abomination, and the cover says the Incredible Hulk at bay.
Yes, yeah. It's very confusing. I originally thought that was the one they were adapting. I was like, wait, no, that's not it. Yeah.
Yeah. they recycled that title. It was just too good to let go.
Yeah,
and then
I guess
they made
a
record out of it, too. Why does the Rhino have shorts on?
I don't know. You know, I mean, so Draco has shorts on, you know. Abomination has shorts on. Yeah. Everybody's got shorts on, you know.
Well, you know, I think the Rhino's like, isn't that a suit? It's like, I don't think you're going to see Rhino.
That's a suit, yeah. The Rhino's wearing an actual costume, yeah.
Yeah, so the Abomination, I hope he keeps his shorts on, because I think that's him, you know.
Yeah.
and the Abomination, the big, we're talking about the comic, and you know, but the big splash page where it first shows the Abomination, like, lifting that tank or whatever over his head, that artwork by Trimpe was used on everything in the 70s that had the Abomination. I remember seeing it in the Marvel, the Super City, the cardboard city that, like, you could build the buildings.
Oh, yeah.
You could make the Baxter Building, and you could make Doctor Strange Sanctum Sanctorum and all that, or whatever it is. And the Abomination little figurine was the same. I remember, you know, having that little figure of the Abomination and, like, holding it up to my comic book saying, hey! Even then, I was spotting that type of stuff.
You really do have an eagle eye for this stuff, I gotta say.
It's a sickness.
Yeah, and the comic's a whole lot of fun. It really is. The Hulk, there were more Hulk Power Records adventures, but not that many, considering the fact that he was a TV star. You know, I mean, I really, like, Spider-Man is really the big Power Records star in the Marvel side. And, in fact, you mentioned Back Issue earlier. I wrote an article for Back Issue about the Spider-Man and Power Records, which appeared in Back Issue number 44. Just in case you want to read it, it's on my website, my namtab.com, which is my all-purpose illustration writing website. So the article is there in PDF form if anybody wants to read it. But, yeah, the Hulk really didn't get that much play from the Power Records, considering he was – he was a bigger TV star than Spider-Man was, certainly.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah, and, you know, in the 70s, you know, the Hulk, once the TV show was on, I mean, he was the number two guy in licensing for Marvel. I mean, you could definitely tell that, you know, it was all of a sudden it was, you know, Superman, Batman, and then Spider-Man and Hulk.
Yep.
You know, toward the end of the 70s. I mean, Captain America, he got kicked to the side. You know?
Yeah, he did.
He used to be the number two guy, and then suddenly it was the Hulk everywhere. So it really is surprising. Especially if that they didn't go back and do almost, you know, more TV type stories like newer ones. I think you had on your Power Records site, like, they did a Hulk album. Didn't they do an album with different Hulk
stories? There is a long playing album of different Hulk stories. Yeah.
Okay. Are they more comic based, or they feel more like the TV show?
I believe those are they're all original. They're not based on any of the comics. So yeah, I think they're all TV related. So the stories here, it's an LP. It's an untitled LP. It's just called The Incredible Hulk, and the stories are called Black Chasm, Monster from the Deep, The Assassin, and Blind Alley. But I'm not familiar with, if they're from the comics, I'm not familiar what comics they were from. So I bet that they're original stories.
Gotcha. One thing I will say, when the segment where Jim's trying to disarm the bomb, that's really well done. It's very tense. Telling him go down this hall, that, which I know is from the comic, but they do a really good job of it. I mean, you know, and Jim's getting irritated with Ross for giving him the countdown.
Thunderbolt Ross is just a dick. I mean, he just is. He doesn't, you know, like. And right at the point where, like, the Hulk has, they've achieved some sort of detente with the Hulk, that's when he decides to pull a double cross. Like,
it's
you know, not to, like, overthink this, but, like, you have to think that the Hulk stories are probably fairly critical of the military in general. They tend to present the military as a bunch of yahoos who just want to blow stuff up. And, you know, it's funny that would not work nowadays, you know, like that would not fly. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, but it's just an interesting that how different the times were, that you could have this general and write him as just a complete monster. You know, I mean, you're sympathizing with the Hulk, and it's Thunderbolt who's always just ruining everything. I mean, it's just like, you know.
Well, you know, if these guys really did just leave Hulk alone and just, you know, just let him wander off into some wilderness somewhere, he'd probably be fine.
Exactly right. Just leave Hulk alone, you know. But he can't do it. He just can't do it. So we're going to do – so we got some listener feedback from the previous episode of the Power Records podcast. And we're going to start off with an email we got on the Aquaman Friend from Earth to Chris himself. So, Chris, why don't you go ahead?
All righty. That was about the Christmas episode. And I wrote, man, that was a lot of fun. Since I knew this was coming, I pulled the album out and listened to it this weekend. And I actually had the 45 single version of the Superman tale as a kid. I was too young to understand a rather weighty plot involving World War III, but the little girl saying, "Will it light up the whole world, Daddy?" over and over again has sure stuck with me. The Wonder Woman story seems to be a sequel to the Wonder Woman story on the Justice League album that also had Aquaman, Flash, Plastic Man, and Metamorpho. I believe Brunhilde was the villainess there as well. Like Michael, I'm a huge fan of the classic DCCP, DC Comics Presents, Superman Santa team up, and even read it to my daughter last week in true Power Records fashion with bad voices, etc. I don't mind my heroes meeting Santa, but that may be because of all the comic covers I had as a kid where he was obviously chummy with them anyway. The Batman story, wow. I had forgotten how thoroughly odd this story was. Most of the Power Records Batman output had a very authentic Bronze Age feel to it. You can imagine those stories in a Batman or Detective issue of the time. Not this one. I think Adam West may have even balked at this script as being too campy. I don't agree with the overly obsessed, socially maladjusted Batman of the past 20 years or so, but I think this version goes a bit too far in the other direction. It is fun in its utter ridiculousness, though. Merry Christmas.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not a big fan of Facebreaker Batman and, like, Alienate Everybody Batman, but this Batman who is singing Christmas carols on the street, that's,
Yeah.
Let's just stroll down the street, Robin, and
That is just, I just love that. I love that thing did that. And you're right. I think that the Brunhild character does seem to be the same character from the one from the Justice League record. So somebody at Power Records was awake long enough to think, oh, we can do that again. So I'm going to read a couple other comments that we got. One from the Firewater blog from Sphinx Magoo. He writes, this episode was a lot of fun. A few quick notes. The actor playing the villain in the Superman story was quite good. Am I the only one who detected that he did a pretty fair impersonation of Burt Lancaster? He certainly seemed to mimic Lancaster's way of delivering dialogue. I never thought about that, but I think that's pretty accurate, actually.
Yeah, that is accurate, yeah.
Two, the Wonder Woman episode was my favorite of the bunch. I think this episode would make a great Rankin-Bass, like, stop-motion animated show. Warner Animation needs to make this now. Listen to it again and with that style of show in mind, and you'll see what I mean. I believe anything should be done to a Rankin-Bass style, so you got me on that one.
Yeah.
Three.
If Wonder Woman looked like Francesca from...
Oh!
I saw your Facebook. You changed your Facebook page, and I was like,
That had to be one of the early redheads that was a formative in my life, was Jessica from Man Monster Party and Mrs. Claus. They really knew how to make those women look... oddly sensual despite being puppets. But anyway, Sphinx continues. He says, the Batman segment was weird. It seemed to take a lot of its cues from the 60s TV show, which was really in line with the first year of the Batman stories after Julie Schwartz took over as editor. This was the time of friendly Batman covered in the first Batman Showcase volume. It even had a bit of Bob Haney feel to it. That's absolutely true. Still a great show with a lot of nostalgic memories. I used to listen to Power Records when I was much younger. I think we had the Spider-Man Man-Wolf story, the Batman and Robin Joker story, the Captain America and Falcon Phoenix story, the Spider-Man Dragon Man story, and I think the Hulk. I recognize the intro and outro music for this podcast episode is coming from the Batman record. Keep up the great work. Thank you, Sphinx. And yes, that is where that music is from. It's from the Batman records.
That's some music, too. That's some good stuff.
Yeah, very dynamic 70s cop show music. Dun, dun, yeah. Dun, 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 you know, yeah, Banachek or any of those guys.
Yeah.
On the Aquaman Trial, you got a comment from Blue Scream. My podcast Christmas wish came true. Thanks for doing the show, guys. I really dig these. Thank you, Blue Scream. We got a comment from Diablo Frank. He chastises Chris. He says, missing the second show. Does Earth Crew 2 Chris think he's Johnny Carson now? I will admit, it was not Chris. That was me. I invited Michael Bailey to do the Christmas show, so don't take Chris to task on that. He was not dumping the show second episode in. Don't worry about it.
I did White Christmas.
You did that right. You did a White Christmas commentary track. So Frank mentions, I was surprised by how much I liked up my Light Up the Tree, Mr. President. I don't own any Superman Power records because they struck me as boring, but this story grabbed me. The voice talents here were aces, well, except Lois. The subject matter surprisingly intense, and I love the part where they sampled Peace, Little Girl from Lyndon Johnson's campaign against Barry Goldwater. People too often forget how closely associated Wonder Woman was with World War II, and the loss of Nazis in the modern era hit her rogues gallery hard. The evil Teutonic goddess Brunhild was introduced in a 1966 45 RPM and was still avenging Germany's defeats in global conflicts decades after the last one. I talked about the return of Brunhild, and it's funny that she should be revived by Power Records 11 years later instead of introducing a new villainess. Wonder Woman is like DC's Captain America, and she needs an absolute, inarguable evil to battle. The concept gets muddled and confused when more specific and polarizing politics come into play, where the characters are meant to be generalized positive orientation for universal appeal. The Prisoner of Christmas Island showcases a much-missed, amazing Amazon making use of her tiara and invisible robot plane. In this way, she bridges the gap between Superman and Batman, where she spent too many years post-crisis as a themed variation on Supergirl. Santa Claus didn't get enough action in this team-up, though, and I really need him to visit the inconsolable orphan because that actress sold that so hard it hurt. I'm surprised you guys forgot to mention the part where Wonder Woman indebtens the Nazis as part of her Christmas cheer. Maybe Diana was on loan to the Mossad? That's entirely possible. I forgot that. But yeah, there is a lot of death in these Power Records stories, surprisingly enough. We got a comment on Firestone Fam from Kyle Benning. I just realized I never commented on this one, so I felt obligated to go back and listen to it again tonight. Don't worry, a nuclear holocaust story and a plot for world domination by a crazed Nazi female, crazed female Nazi was just as enjoyable on January 6th as it was on Before Christmas. I had never heard these before. I had some of the non-superhero Christmas Power Records, and now I feel I lived a deprived childhood, having missed out on hearing these when I was a kid. Great episode. Great episode. Thanks for sharing. It's always great having Mike on a show, and I'm stoked to use my slogan, motto, catchphrase for the show. Drop the needle and flip the page. Yeah, that. Thank you very much. We're 17 episodes into the Who's Who show. We don't have a phrase yet. But drop the needle and turn the page was just perfect when Kyle suggested it. So
yeah, that's great.
We also got a little bit of Twitter love from Ryan DaCosta. He mentioned the show. Thank you very much. And then there was one other thing that I wanted to mention, but I'm going to get to that at the end. Before we do that, though, we're going to do a little bit of plugging here. As always, you know, if you want to you want to follow me, you can follow me on the Aquaman Shrine at aquamanshrine.net. You can follow Shag at firestonefan.com. But specifically wanted to mention, Earth to Chris is now a podcaster. He has his own podcast. So, Chris, let's talk about your podcast a little bit before we sign off. Tell us all about the show.
Well, the show is called Supermates, the husband and wife geek cast. And I actually enlisted my wife, Cindy, to co-host the show with me. So you will get an actual female who is willing to talk about comics and TV and movies, all things geeky.
Yes,
and
they do exist.
They do exist. I married one of the few. and we talk about this stuff anyway. She has to listen to me go on and on about it. So we thought we'd just record it. And it should be our debut episode will be coming up this Friday. We got a Valentine's theme first episode about comic book couples, including Aquaman and Mira.
Yay.
So we're going to try to keep a bi-weekly schedule. So the next episode should come 2 weeks later and then so on and so on. So check that out. That is at supermatescomic.blogspot.com.
Yeah, we will include the link on the show notes for anybody that wants to follow it. And Chris was nice enough to send me the first episode early so I could sort of get my thoughts on it. And it's very charming. It really is to hear Chris and his wife talk about the stuff. And it's just amazing to, you know, I think just remarkable that you found a woman who's into all this stuff. And the story you tell about how you discovered that for the first time is wonderful. It involves Chris's bedroom. But it's PG though. So we're all right. We're fine. But it's a really cute show. And then, Chris, I welcome you to the world of podcasting. You dumb bastard. I don't know why you would subject yourself to this, but,
it's all your fault. Okay. It's your fault.
Hey, I guess you figured these two idiots can do it. I mean, how hard can it be? But anyway, I hope it's a big success, and I hope you have a lot of fun. And I will definitely be listening to the show, so look forward to it.
Yeah, we're already having a blast, you know, just doing it. And if other people listen to it and enjoy it, that's great. And we're looking forward to hearing what people think and getting it out there. So
awesome. But before I sign off, is there anything else about these two Power Records we wanted to mention?
They're fun.
Absolutely. That always needs to be restated. Okay, well, before we sign off, I want to credit Daniel Cynical Adams, who, of course, is the half-composer of our Who's Who and Fire and Water podcast theme songs with his band, the Bad Mama Jams. But he found something Power Records related, which is unbelievable. Eminem, the rapper Eminem, on his new record has a song called Evil Twin. And on Evil Twin, there is a sample from a Power Record.
No.
In the middle of the song, they sample the Crawler in the Mist Conan adventure, which we ran on a previous Power Records episode back when it was part of the regular Fire and Water. But there's a sample of the Conan record in the middle of it. I mean, I was flummoxed by that. He sent me the clip, and then I went and downloaded the song, and there it is. So I can't end the show with the whole Eminem song because I don't want to have to rate this thing explicit. So, but at the end of the show, after the theme song, you're going to hear a little clip of the Eminem song with the Power Records sample in question. I cannot imagine that Eminem is a fan of the Power Records, but who knows?
Well, he dressed up as Robin in that one video.
You know, he did. Maybe he's a comic book guy. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, early in his career, he was like in the whole video. He's just like Robin for the whole thing. So
after the theme song ends, enjoy this little clip of the Eminem song with Conan, Crawler in the Mist buried inside of it. It's truly remarkable. So anyway, Chris, thanks so much for joining me again for the Power Records. I love doing these. I love presenting these to people because, as we've talked about in previous episodes, they're pretty much unavailable. You know, they're not. You have to get them. If you're going to get them, you got to like go to my blog, which is powerrecord.blogspot.com, where you can listen to the audio files of most of them, and you can find a lot of them on YouTube. But they're just unavailable. They're not, you know, nobody's made them ever for sale. So they're kind of just, they sort of just disappeared. So it's always a lot of fun presenting these, and I can't wait to do the next episode and see what that theme is going to be. So anyway, I guess until then, drop the needle and flip the page, and go out and listen to the More Power records, and we will see you next time.
See ya.
Bye.
Come, Robin. Into the Batmobile and home.
Welcome back to the land of the living, my friend. You have slept for quite some time.
So who's left? Lady Gaga? Mess with the Bieber? Nah.